From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
On your way to your job, or running for the bus, or running to the gym, or running to get your child from daycare, I am going to stop you in your tracks and make you talk to me about Cate Blanchett. That premise, while obnoxious to some, is still very funny to me.
For years, comedian Billy Eichner has been interrogating strangers on the streets of New York about pop culture in exchange for ridiculous prizes, often with a celebrity in tow. All his badgering has paid off. This year, True TV's Billy on the Street scored its first Emmy nomination for Best Variety Sketch Series. Eichner explains why he won't tell any of his celebrity guests what will be asked of them ahead of time, not even then First Lady Michelle Obama. But first on the news banter, questions surround a death on the set of Deadpool 2. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So there's going to be some soul searching in the stunt community. It's already underway. We had a tragic situation on Deadpool 2. An African-American female motorcycle racer, a prominent one, S.J. Harris, was killed on the set of Deadpool 2 doing a stunt. And while she was an accomplished motorcycle racer, she had not done stunts before, and she was riding without a helmet. And both of those things are causing on-the-record questioning from members of the stunt person community.
Right. A lot of the questioning is focused on the fact that she was a big motorcycle racer and not a stunt person by training. And there are things that you do when you are a stunt person, like preparing for impact and familiarity with different types of crash scenarios, that were not necessarily reflected in the preparation for this particular stunt. We don't know all the specifics, but a lot of the people in the stunt community are saying that this could have absolutely been prevented. The second one is the helmet issue that comes up in a lot of these situations. The helmets are not used because this person was standing in for an actor who's not wearing a helmet, but the argument goes that in this day and age of visual effects and how most scenes in these superhero movies are enhanced and changed via visual effects, you could conceivably have someone wearing a helmet and fix that in post. So the fact that this comes on the heels of another death on The Walking Dead set last month, where a stunt person fell to his death preparing for a shot, I think that's caused a lot of people to really look closely at what's going on sets.
So no helmet. And of course, she was African-American, and apparently a consideration in using her was that her skin tone matched the actress who plays Domino in the film. And that was a reason to put her on this motorcycle, which apparently was much heavier than the motorcycles she raced. And therefore, that motorcycle would have handled very differently. So I think that's going to be looked at and looked at closely. On a much less tragic note, Tom Cruise, you know, loves to be that guy who does his own stunts and was jumping from building to building. And he has broken his ankle, and that means Mission Impossible 6 production is delayed for 8 weeks. Now, they say they're not going to change the release date, but this is a headache Paramount doesn't need. And Tom Cruise demands a ton of control when he is in films. You know, The Mummy was an absolute extravaganza of Tom Cruise control, no pun intended. And, you know, somebody may want to say to him, maybe this isn't such a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is he is a 55-year-old man now, and we know he's in great shape, and he loves that he can do a lot of his own stunts. And in fact, Paramount has incorporated that fact into a lot of the marketing for these Mission Impossible movies. But the risk of doing that is the situation we found this week, which was he's now out of commission for 2 months. And on a movie like this, that's a hugely expensive thing. There's insurance to cover it, but it's not what you want. And if this kind of thing is something that could have been done by a stunt person, maybe it's time to have that conversation with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, maybe so. Meanwhile, we talked last week about Disney starting a streaming service and pulling some of its content back from Netflix. Well, it's not like they deliberately did this instantly, because obviously this had been planned for a while. But on the heels of that came the announcement that Netflix was poaching Shonda Rhimes from Disney's ABC. Shonda Rhimes has, of course, been a major player for ABC. Grey's Anatomy, believe it or not, is still its number one drama and still a very valuable property. Does very well for Netflix in the older episodes, as a matter of fact. Also Scandal, which is wrapping up. But she will still be at ABC for a while because she has a Grey's Anatomy spinoff coming up and a legal show. But, you know, it's a huge poach. And this is what John Landgraf of FX talked about, this looming talent war that is going to go on now as more and more companies get into the streaming game. And there's a battle between the broadcast and cable people trying to maybe stream while they also hold on to their old businesses, and the new guys like Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon trying to get as many eyeballs as they can. This is a great time to be a TV content creator, Matt. We are in the wrong line of work, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at this. Yes, it's a big poach. I think that the message from Netflix is very clear, that they are willing to pay what it takes to get the most prominent talent to make that statement higher and to amass the most amount of shows that it can own. Because if there's one lesson from Disney taking all of its content away, it's that the real power in Hollywood right now is the people who own their content. And that's what Netflix wants to be, and they're willing to pay for it. And with Shonda Rhimes, they're going to own these shows. The more significant development, I think, this past week has been the Wall Street Journal story that says that Apple is amassing $1 billion in their war chest to become a content player themselves. And we've seen Apple make some significant hires in the executive space, bringing over the heads of Sony Pictures Television to run their burgeoning video business. But the fact that they're willing to spend apparently up to $1 billion this year, which is half the programming budget of HBO, that signals another player, and the talent war is only going to get worse.
And I would postulate that $1 billion is just them clearing their throat because they have...
Yeah, that is the Tim Cook, you know, private jet gas budget.
Yeah, so they are just getting started at $1 billion. And obviously, Amazon and Netflix are going to be looking over their shoulder at them. And they have been hiring up. And it's clear that they have now come to play in this space, which people have been worrying about for years and expecting that they were just thinking about it but not going to do it. But now they are doing it. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. He's making dreams come true. Billy on the Street. Season 5 of the true TV show Billy on the Street opens like this.
I'm about to hit the street with Emmy Award winner Jonathan Hamm to play a new game I like to call Would You Have a Threesome with Me and John Hamm? Are you ready, John?
I am.
Let's go. Miss, for a dollar, would you consider a threesome with me and John Hamm?
Hello, hi, yes, sorry.
A threesome with me and John Hamm. Would you have one?
For a dollar?
Yes, very progressive. I'm gay, you're black, you're plus size, he's John Hamm, he has a SAG award. It's all happening.
All of this is in play.
He doesn't have an Oscar, though.
That's right, good point!
The host and creator of Billy on the Street is Billy Eichner, who is, in real life, not as intense as his persona on the show, though the character's obsession with pop culture is real. Aside from convincing celebrities to join him for person-on-the-street bits, Eichner also puts celebrity guests through elaborate obstacle courses, like the one in which Rachel Dratch was called upon to reenact Leah Remini's Escape from Scientology.
This is it. This is the volcano you see on the cover of Dianetics, which is the guide to Scientology. You have to climb the Dianetics volcano.
When Eichner's not asking strangers random questions, do gay people care about John Oliver? He's been at work on a dizzying array of other projects. He had a recurring role on Parks and Recreation, co-stars in Hulu's Difficult People, and he will appear in the upcoming season of the FX series American Horror Story. Eichner studied theater at Northwestern University, hoping to make it on Broadway. When that wasn't a fit, he invented his own live talk show called Creation Nation, which he performed at the 99-seat Ars Nova Theater in New York.
I would sing songs in the show. I would do stand-up in the show. I would rant and rave. And then what would happen eventually is that I thought, well, let's do some videos. We made spoofs of Project Runway and Extreme Makeover, Home Edition, which all these things that were popular 10, 12 years ago when I was performing. And another video we made is me going on the street and talking to people in my crazed, insanely passionate, irrationally excited persona. And those became what would be known as Billy on the Street videos. And that live show, Creation Nation, took off in a small way in New York. People started coming. The New York Times wrote about it. And that was my first brush with agents and managers and TV people coming to see me and
So you then went to make it a TV show?
Yeah, so basically what happened was YouTube came along, and we put the videos from the stage show on YouTube, and not immediately, but eventually they went viral. And Funny or Die, Mike Farah, who was the president of production at Funny or Die and is now, all these years later, the CEO of Funny or Die, he emailed me one fateful Friday night, and I'll always remember getting this email. And so Mike said, I love your On the Street videos. If you're ever in LA, come and talk to me. So I lied to him and I said, I happen to be coming to LA in 2 weeks, just coincidentally, which was not the case at all. And I was just going to talk to him. And I think he thought maybe I would do the videos exclusively for Funny or Die. But I had another idea. And at the time, Funny or Die wasn't doing TV. Now they are. Because of me. No, I'm just kidding. But I said, hey, we can do videos for your website, and I'm sure we could work something out for that. But I have an idea that I've had for a while to do Billy on the Street as a half-hour TV show with loose game show elements to it to give it some structure, even if it's a silly structure. And the main idea was I want to do a game show where the contestant wins or loses based on whether or not they agree with the host. So a subjective game show centered around entertainment. I had all these ideas. And Mike was in a position, because at Funny or Die, he had a budget to make videos every week. That's what they did. So he slipped me some money to go back to New York, because he was really smart. And he said, this is a great idea. Your videos are hilarious, but TV executives are going to need to see how it works as a game show. To ask them to make the leap in their head from your videos to half-hour game show might not work. So he gave me, I don't know what it was, $15,000 or something. He set me up with a small, very young team of camera guys and a production company in New York. And we went and we made the sizzle reel, which would show how Billy on the Street would work when you started to do for a dollar and you threw in some money and some prizes. And when Mike saw it, he exploded. And he just said, this is going to work. And then he went around with me and we took it to a bunch of networks and we got pilot offers from all the places we dreamed of getting offers from, you know, some of the bigger cable networks, Comedy Central, what have you. And then a smaller network, Fuse, came along, which was being run at that time by these two guys, Dave Clark and Brad Schwartz, who were two of my biggest fans. They're no longer at Fuse, but they said, look, we really want the show. And they knew that if they had just offered a pilot, I would have probably gone elsewhere because they don't have the eyeballs that some of these other networks have. So we're going to take you straight to 10 series and you'll more or less have final cut. And we want you to do what you do. We're not going to get in your way. We just really want the show. And I was not in a position to turn that down.
Straight to series, magic words.
So we went straight to series, which now is getting to be more of a common thing, but at the time was very rare. This is pre-Netflix and pre-Hulu, you know.
Right.
This is five or six years ago.
Hundreds of years ago, right? Yeah.
And of course, there were pros and cons to being on a small network, but A, I was not in a financial position at the time to turn down what they were paying me, number one, if I'm being realistic, because it wasn't just a pilot, it was 10 episodes. And B, my vision for it was so specific and I had been doing it for so long. People may not have known me, but I was out there doing it, you know, in a small way in New York that I couldn't have interference. Not with Billy on the Street, maybe with something new. I'm happy to take people's notes. Sometimes notes are good. But on Billy on the Street, I just had such a gut feeling for A, what it needed to be, and B, how it needed to be produced, because I had the experience. It's a very unique show. Unless you've done it before, you don't know what it takes, and I had been doing it. And so Fuse was willing to do all of that and to support me in that. And we did 3 seasons at Fuse. Fuse ended up being sold. Dave and Brad were long gone, and the vision for the network was changing. We were getting a hunch that that was the case. And so we asked if we could go elsewhere because the show was outgrowing the network. The videos from the show were starting to go very viral and people were really thinking of the show, which was a TV show, as a web series, which was a bit frustrating. And so we wanted to go somewhere where we'd have a little more financial support and more eyeballs. And so we repitched the show after our 3rd season and we went to True TV. We did a deal with True TV and the show would rerun on TBS. And now Billy on the Street's also on Hulu, which is the place where the episodes stream. And here we are.
Here we are with an Emmy nomination.
Oh, hey, Emmy nomination. Yeah.
That.
In a category with SNL and Tracy Ullman, you know, a lot of shows and people I grew up watching.
I think, you know, you SNL this year, but other than that, it's you, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've made a lot of jokes about it so far.
Yes, you have.
Because, well, I'm an award show junkie, so for me not to acknowledge, you know, people when they get nominated for these things, they don't really dive into, at least in a public way, they don't really talk about their chances, you know?
Right. No, they
but
don't.
I'm an award show junkie, and so it would be ridiculous for me not to acknowledge that I kind of know where we stand. And I also think it's funny. You know, there's a lot of comedic fodder to be drawn from the whole Emmy experience, and it's new for me. And, you know, yeah, SNL had obviously had a huge year, and we're in a very bizarre political climate, and they've confronted that in a very effective way. Billy on the Street has too, in its own small way.
Absolutely.
We got much more political and socially
conscious
this year.
There's one where you say I've done my political thing, so give me an Emmy nomination.
Yeah, exactly. There's one segment where we did an obstacle course about how easy it is to buy a gun in America. We did it with Keegan-Michael Key, who's so great. And at the end of it, I run around screaming, I did political comedy, now give me my Emmy. Because it does seem like, you know, if you do political comedy, your show takes on the sheen of importance that it may not have had. Now, that is not why I really did this segment. You know,
I'm just acknowledging the comedy.
Yes, of course. But it's true. And now we're in a whole crazy time where shows that which didn't even acknowledge politics now do on a nightly basis. That's just the time we're living in. But I'm having fun with the whole Emmy process. You know, I will say there's only one show in my category which let Donald Trump host during his campaign, and it sure as hell wasn't mine.
That's right. They should pay for that, right?
Exactly. No.
Think of that, voting members of the TV Academy.
Exactly. No, I'm kidding. I really am. For all of that, I mean, I like I said, I'm enjoying exploiting the competitive nature of the Emmys and how ridiculous all of it is. We really are genuinely so proud and honored to have had this little tiny show and to have now gotten this far. That really is an achievement. I'm
Absolutely.
Okay with patting myself on the back and also everyone that makes the show, because we have worked so hard with far fewer resources than some other people have. And here we are.
Coming up after a short break, Billy Eichner tells us about a segment that went awry with the rapper Nas and filming with Michelle Obama under the watchful eye of the Secret Service. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Billy Eichner, host and creator of True TV's comedy game show, Billy on the Street, nominated for Emmy in the Best Variety Sketch category this year. Today, any celebrity who appears on the show probably has a rough idea of what they're in for. That was not always the case. You had, I don't know at what point, this encounter with Nas, the rapper.
That was our second season, maybe?
And he was not feeling this.
Rabbi, let's see his prize. Oh, it's a birdcage!
You can't be serious.
Yes, it's a birdcage!
I'm out here in the streets answering these questions, and this is my prize?
Yeah, birdcage. It's very useful. Do you have a bird?
I gotta go, man. This is wrong.
Okay, all right.
There's no bird.
There's no bird. I'm sorry, but you can buy a bird.
You're trying. I mean, I can see you as a person who interviews people. You're trying to get him into the space,
yeah.
And he will not go.
He will not go. And, you know, that was a while back. People didn't know who I was. I think if he did it now, he'd probably have some clue. But I felt bad for him, really, in hindsight, because I think that his team or his managers
didn't prep him.
Whoever forced him to do it and said it was a good idea did not prep him correctly. And he hadn't seen my videos and he hadn't seen the show, clearly, and he didn't know how to react. And I don't think he was actually angry at me. I think he was making a spontaneous choice as an actor or as a performer who was on camera to not engage with me, thinking that that would be funny. I really think...
Oh, you think that was an attempt at humor?
I do. I think it was a misguided attempt at humor to not engage with me.
I just read, I'm embarrassed and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and he didn't know what to do, and I think he was just caught very off guard.
So did that inform things with you? Like, you say to people now, please explain, or do you not want to explain too much? Or do you figure by now everybody just knows?
I want people to be aware of what they're getting into, because I don't want them to be in an uncomfortable position. I wouldn't want that to happen to me. No matter how prepared you are for Billy on the Street, you have no idea what I'm planning. We never tell people what games we're going to play.
Well, I will note that with the First Lady, Michelle Obama, not the current one,
right?
Can't see her on Billy on the Street. But
no, she's not invited.
But with the other First Lady, You did not give her the questions.
No.
Or the, I prepped the, you know, this is what we're going to do. And she does look to me genuinely terrified.
She is.
You and your husband have such busy lives, to say the least.
It's really busy.
It's very busy, right? He's the leader of the free world. You're the first lady. Now, do you ever come home and are there any TV shows that you guys like to watch together? Like, does he ever come home and you say, oh, good, you're here. I just DVR'd Hot in Cleveland. Anything like that?
There are some shows like that. A lot of Sports Center going on in our house.
Oh, wow. ESPN.
Yeah, if I want to talk to him, I got to know a little bit about football. So.
Oh, I got
basketball
it.
Basketball or whatever it is.
God, remember that movie Hoosiers with Gene Hackman?
Sort of.
Come out of retirement!
Her team came to us. They were fans. And her team said, okay, so what are you going to ask her? And I said, well, I can't tell you that. Because that's Billy on the street. It's about spontaneity. And I said, if we give her the questions in advance and she's trying to look like she didn't know them, but is trying to play it off as if, you know, she's hearing it for the first time, but clearly has prepared answers in her head, it's not going to be funny. It's going to be cheesy. Everyone's going to see it. The audience is too smart for that. And the magic of it is that it's spontaneous. And that even with these very famous people, they're allowing themselves, they're giving themselves over to me and my world, right? And you have to go along for the ride. And I said to them, as much as I want to do it, we should not do it if she absolutely needs to know the questions in advance, which I understand. She's the first lady
that
of the United States.
Really, to me, that would be so hard to say no to Michelle Obama.
I wasn't saying no. I was just saying the best way for this to work is this.
I'm not quarreling with the premise. I'm just saying part of you must have been like, I really would like to do this with Michelle Obama.
Yes. And I did say that. I mean, I could not have reiterated more to them how much I wanted to do it. I just said, for her sake, I want her to look good. I want to look good. And I want people to watch the video. When I'm asking her to run around that supermarket and she's pushing me in the shopping cart and we're doing all those crazy things, she had no preparation for that. The only people who knew were the Secret Service. Because if she's going to move, the Secret Service needed to know if she was going to physically go somewhere
where
in the store.
She going? Yeah.
So she didn't know, but the Secret Service knew. And even as I'm saying this now, I'm like, did we really do this? And we did. And you know what? I was so proud of that segment. That was Emmy nominated in a short format category. And she loved it. And I mean, we all know she's Michelle Obama. She's spectacular. But part of the reason she's spectacular is that she respects artists and culture. And not that Billy on the Street is so important, but even with little old me, she was willing to say, you know what? I'm going to trust this guy. He knows what he's doing. So let's do it.
Good for her. Now, so is there somebody now where you look at them and say, they will not work on my show? I can't.
A celebrity, you mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. It's not meant for everybody.
You just have a feeling about it? Like,
yeah. There are some people
who...
They have to be smart. They have to be very game. You know, it's not easy. You know, without naming any names, we've had some big names on the show. And even the comedy
people... John Hamm, Stephen Colbert.
A lot of people. But even the comedy people who have an improv background, it's a very different thing when you're going up to a real person on the street. That is very different than just doing improv in a theater with your improv troupe. Even the funniest, most spontaneous people sometimes freeze up, and they're more scared than they thought they would be when they said they wanted to do the show. Some people are not at all. John Hamm.
He would look like he was just chomping at the bit.
He would talk to everyone. He would talk to more people than I would. He was so engaged. He was the perfect guest. He was with us for hours, and he just had a great time, I think. And so he's an example of someone who is pretty fearless, but sometimes people aren't. You know, in the early years, we were begging people to do the show, and now we're turning people down. We get, you know, publicists and managers and people coming to us, all kinds of big names. You'd be shocked. I'm not bragging. This is just the fact.
I would not be shocked. You have Michelle Obama. How shocked could I be?
Yeah, I mean, people like the show, but it's not necessarily meant for everyone, and there's no really being good at it, but there is a certain comfort level you need with what I do. Otherwise, it's awkward for the person. Otherwise, you're in a Nas situation, and I'm trying to avoid that. Once was funny, but that's not you don't want to make a career out of that.
No, not too many. I mean, some people, as I remember watching one person go, you're trying to accost them, and she says, I'm in a crisis. But everybody signs a release. So whatever the crisis was, somebody on your team stopped this person and said, could you just hold the crisis? We need you to sign
100%.
And they signed.
And they signed. Well, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
That girl happened to sign. You know, there's plenty of times when I feel like, oh, that person said something really funny, or I said something really funny, or we both did. And I cross my fingers that they sign, and then they don't sign. And sometimes they do. I mean, we've gotten good at convincing people to sign. And now, all these years later, if someone's on the fence, you know, one of our production assistants or producers who's talking to the people to get them to sign the release, they can literally pull out their iPhone and say, here's the video he did with Michelle Obama, or here he is with Will Ferrell. This is what he does. This is a legit thing. And
be with the cool people.
It's a comedy act. It's not real, even though he might have said something crazy to you. It's a joke. And that gets some people to sign. And some people still say, you know what? I get it. Good luck to you. I just don't want to be on TV. And we don't pressure them any more than that.
Do some people now see you coming and they're no good because they're trying to be funny? Or
yeah, people do see me coming sometimes, but I've gotten pretty good at weeding them out. Even
you
when
get
they're
that
trying
look in the
to,
eye. They see, I see Billy Eichner.
There's a look
I'm
in their
funny.
Eye. So even when they're trying to pretend that they don't know me, I'm right in their face and I can see it. And look, I want people to know me at this point. If no one knew me, I'd be pissed. We've been doing this show forever. I want people to be watching it and to know who I am. Plus, I'm catching you off guard. So I'm sure there are people who do know me, but the way I'm getting to people, and it's not only me sometimes, it's, oh yeah, you might know me, Billy, but behind me is Chris Pratt, and then you get the reaction. And so it's a mixed bag, but we still have enough people to make it work.
Do you still like being Billy, that Billy?
I do. I mean, I love the show, and I'm actually shocked that I'm saying that, because you have to remember, yes, there's been 5 seasons of the TV show, but I've been making these videos since the summer of 2004. And that's a long time. That's most of my adult life. I mean, if you look on YouTube and see my early videos, I look different. I actually think I look better.
Better then or better now?
I think I look younger then, but better now, if
okay.
You can believe that.
I do believe that. You're a fine-looking fellow.
But I'm okay. I'm doing the best with what I've got, Kim. Not that
you
great.
You and Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, exactly. Me and Barbara Streisand. Thank you for bringing Barbara up today. That was a pleasant surprise. But I am certainly at a point now where I'm very grateful that I'm having the opportunity to be other characters. Difficult People and American Horror Story, Friends from College, other things that are in the planning stages, I guess you could say. I'm very happy that I'm going to get a little break from it. But I can't imagine, at least in the short term, that it won't continue to be a part of my life. I'm figuring all of that out right now, like exactly how I want it to come back. I don't know if it's going to come back in the same way, but I also certainly want it to come back. And no matter what I'm able to do after this, it will all have started with Billy on the Street. And I'm very grateful for that. I know that the people who love it, it really means a lot to them. I see it on social media. I mean, I'm not patting myself on the back. I just see it. There's a passion for Billy on the Street. It really makes people laugh. I mean, the people who get it. And I want to honor that. And I don't want to just turn my back on it. And to be honest, the initial premise of I am going to interrupt you on your way to your job or running for the bus or running to the gym or running to get your child from daycare, I am going to stop you in your tracks and make you talk to me about Cate Blanchett. That premise, while obnoxious to some, is still very funny to me, because that character, who is so obsessed with the entertainment industry that there is no other perspective in his life, that premise to me, as someone who grew up fascinated and mesmerized by the entertainment industry, is still very funny to me. So I do want to keep doing it.
Billy Eichner, creator and host of Billy on the Street. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Kim. Thank you.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.